بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is the 10th lecture of our series titled Trying to Understand Religion in the Contemporary World. In the 9th lecture, we emphasized the difference between an atheistic view of the universe and a religious view of the universe, be it theistic or deistic. We spoke about the why and how. When you are specifically asking the why question, that is, why are we there in this world? Why was the universe created? This is the why question. And the why is a universal question. Everybody capable of thinking, having some kind of an IQ, capable of performing rational acts in this world, should be able to answer for himself. If he answers in a metaphysical way, where, as we mentioned, the verses of the Quran, that the intellect, where it is being praised by Allah in the Quran, verses 190-191 of Surah Ali Imran, there the intellect which is being praised by God, Ulil Albab says the Quran about these people who ponder over the creation of the heavens and earth and then come to the conclusion that matter per se doesn't have a reason to be created. Darkness of any kind, a veil of any kind from God, which matter is, should not be created per se. That means it doesn't have a utility in itself apart from being a hindrance to appreciate God in His full metaphysical splendor. So they come to the conclusion immediately, you have not created this in vain, immaculate art thou, save us from the fire, qina azab an-nar, save us from the punishment of fire. So the why question, if it's asked and answered, and the only way it can be answered would be a metaphysical way. A physical interpretation is not possible for an idea so sublime. So what we have is those who do not have a view, a religious view, automatically fall into the category of agnostic. No one can be an atheist because nobody has a proof of non-existence of God. That's not possible. That is not possible at all. Even if you imagine a physical God, unless you have seen the total universe and searched every corner of it and found nothing controlling this universe anywhere in the universe, even at that point you will not be able to even refute till that point even a physical God. And if you do a complete survey of the whole universe and then not find a physical God, then still there is a chance of there being a metaphysical God. So when we cannot deny a physical God itself in the universe, someone sitting somewhere, a physical entity and controlling the universe, which includes us and the world, we will not be able to. So no rational, reasonable atheist who claims to be an atheist will come and defend the position of an atheist. And this has happened earlier, as I have quoted, in the debate which Bertrand Russell had with Father Copleston. And when Father Copleston asked him, this was done on BBC in 1948, he very openly said, no, I am defending the position of an agnostic. That is, I don't know whether God exists or not. That was the point he took. So once you are in a position of agnosticism, you are in doubt for everything. What kind of morals you should have? Why you should have those morals? Why should there be justice? Why there should not be any difference between people of color? Why should the weak be supported? Why should laws be equal for everybody? All these questions will have no proper answer. And since they don't have a proper answer, we find apartheid. We find in the US for long periods of time, colored people, specifically blacks, being targeted, not allowed to join universities, more so in the south of the United States, Texas and other states around. In Europe, we saw the Jews being discriminated, apart from the pogroms, where they were attacked and killed. Even joining universities and getting admission to universities was prohibited, proscribed. So we develop a different kind of ethics, a different kind of morality in the educated world, which doesn't understand the principles, that is the metaphysical principles of creation. The how of it is what science takes care of. It is always good to move towards how when your why is clear. In the beginning, the why was very clear. I have quoted verses from the Quran. Issue of knowing God was not an issue at all. It was obvious that He was the creator. The problem between Abel and Cain was not that one recognized God and the other didn't. It was one of piety, of giving a sacrifice to God, one based on piety and the other not based on piety. And God accepts the one based on piety and doesn't accept that which doesn't have piety in it. That is, it was made with an intention apart from a pure intention for offering it to God. It had some selfishness, and therefore God doesn't accept anything which is impure. So piety is that state of purity, taqwa, and apart from that, it is a state of defilement and therefore not acceptable by God. And this standard was set in the verse, إِنَّمَا يَتَقَبَّلَ اللَّهُ مِنَ الْمُتَّقِينَ. God only and only accepts from the pious. Their acts, their sacrifices, their prayers, their worship. And on that basis, we have that very famous verse, إِنَّ أَكْرَمَكُمْ إِنَّ اللَّهِ أَتْقَاكُمْ. The most noble in the eyes of God amongst you is he who is more pious. God wary, God conscious. So we spoke of these ideas. I have elaborated it in this lecture, which I had not in the previous, the ninth one. But the whole idea was to move from the why to the how. And by forgetting the why, if you progress in the domain of how the world was created, how the universe was created, how we were created, morality will not accompany it. So religion strengthens science, and science, by growing, gives religion the authenticity of its beliefs. We have so many verses in the Quran, which we have already quoted. We speak of physical phenomenon. And the physical phenomenon being following certain rules and principles. Science comes forward, lifts the veil on them, and we now know how the pillars which God says hold the universe together, but which cannot be seen by us, or the movement of the mountains which cannot be seen by us, all comes to light. Or life being created from water, all this has been already mentioned. So when you have a proper interlinking between the two, the why question being very clear, it has its own results. It encourages the how more and more. And the how becomes more and more profound and strengthens the roots and basis of religious premises. Each helping the other. But the start will always be why we are created, why the world has been created, why the universe has been created. And from there onwards, and you can know, the major movement which has taken place towards knowing the physical world to the extent of coming to know that the world, the universe itself, is not eternal, happened about 60 years ago. Before that, there was the idea of the universe being eternal. So the how came slowly. We started to know the quantum 100 years ago. We got a better understanding of gravity around 115 years ago. We learned the laws of motion in a rudimentary manner 400 years ago. We learned the laws of flotation and all that 2000 plus years ago. We learned to calculate eclipses maybe 4000 years ago or 5000 years ago. We started to write maybe 5000 to 6000 years ago. All this took place slowly, and during the last 100 years we have received so much of it that our understanding of the physical world, the how of creation, has become more and more pronounced. Though if you look at the whole structure of creation, still we are at the ABC level. We have not come to the level of finishing the ABCD, leave alone creating words and sentences. So still we are at the beginning. Still quantum theory has a lot of questions. We still have not come to conclude how the physical world came about, whether it's the standard model or should we follow the string theory. And among the followers of both the schools, we have a lot of differences again. And that will continue. It's wonderful. It shows the effort of the human mind to try and grasp whatever it can. And the effort of the human soul to grapple with the facts which the mind captures from the physical world and create it into a metaphysical idea which might be right or wrong. And that wrong, right mixture of things slowly moves towards some kind of reality which is better than the one which we understood earlier. The movement from the Newtonian laws of gravity to the Einsteinian rules of gravity. There's a progress. And then there are people who challenge this as well in different ways to improve it, to see to it that it yields more facts. So all put together, now we are in a position where we have understood that the why is the only option we have, and the how should be encouraged by the why, and the why never will stop the how of it, the science of it. We need to know everything that which we can through our efforts of sight, feeling, hearing, smelling, tasting, all these collected in the mind and then used as raw data by the soul. This process should go on. Religious inquiry needs this physical understanding of the universe, the how of the universe. And then there is the study of the soul itself, the ilmun nafs, Gnostics, We need to delve deep in the quality of the soul, how it behaves, how it reacts to small things. What is the impact of sin on the soul? What is the impact of a good deed on the soul? What is the impact of worship on the soul? What is the impact of righteous deeds on the soul? All this also starts developing side by side. Growth in the physical knowledge, growth in the metaphysical knowledge, coming together in a oneness that moves you towards God. The one and the only. The one and the only. A one which doesn't have a two of any kind. It cannot have a two. His oneness is so complete. So you start getting into those notions of complete oneness. What is complete oneness? How God cannot be two. And when you know that reality which is all encompassing, completely taking us in its mercy, bestowing us the option to live a life in this world, giving us the strength to do things on our own accord, the freedom to move forward and assimilate new knowledge, we would be thankful and we would be prostrating before Him. Through getting to know more of the Ghaib, the idea behind the creation. So the Yuminuna Bil Ghaib was the second thing which we had spoken in the last lecture, having faith in the unseen and how that unseen becomes, and when you have faith, you have to have it on the basis of knowledge, not on the basis of even conjecture. So when God says faith in the unseen, it means that you should have the knowledge of the unseen. Without knowledge, having faith makes no sense. Because the verse says in the Quran, Surah Bani Israel, verse 36, لا تقول ما ليس لك به علم, do not follow that of which you have no knowledge. So faith in the unseen should be a faith based on knowledge, not on the basis of conjecture, which so many verses in the Quran refute. That conjecture will never lead you to truth, cannot replace truth. The verses of the Quran are very clear on that. إِنَّ ظَنَّ لَا يُغْنِي عَنِ الْحَقِّ شَيْئًا. Surely conjecture will never make you discard or disregard the truth. Something which is preponderant, the chance of it being or not being is there, will never replace the truth. So the truth becomes the central quality of this movement from the ghaib, the in the unseen, and finding more and more in the unseen to satisfy the thirst, to satisfy the thirst of the soul. The soul needs to satisfy itself each and every second. I spoke in the last lecture also that the soul is the most fluid thing after God. Why did I say that, and do I have a Quranic verse to say this? Why is the soul thirsty? The thirst of the soul comes from the verse where God speaks about Himself as Surah Rahman again, verse number 29, يَسْأَلُهُ مَنْ فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ كُلُّ يَوْمٍ هُوَ فِي شَانٍ. Everyone in the heavens and earth asks Him, everyone in the heavens and earth asks Him, every day He is engaged in some work. This is about Allah. He is engaged in work every day. And people keep asking Him. Everything, matter asks of Him. Matter worships Him and asks of Him. We worship Him and ask of Him. And He is in the process of giving and giving and bestowing continually, perpetually. So there is no God just sitting idle and doing nothing, as the deistic God of some philosophers would be. He has created and left it to us. He has created it in perfection and now it has given to us, the imperfect beings. So we have come to the point where He has blown the balloon to the full size, 99.9999%, and now it has given to us so that we blow the balance and burst the balloon. That 0.0001%, which is given to us now, is given with the intention that we just blow the final part and the balloon bursts, the way the world is being destroyed, the species being destroyed. So, this kind of view of a deistic God, that is a God who has been moved away from his creation, his creatures. This is not what religion says. No religion says that. Some philosophers and modern day politicians and some scientists, they do have it. But it is again baseless. A God who has become dysfunctional is no God at all. It shows the strength of creation but doesn't require the sustenance and then bestowal from him again and again. So taking away sustenance of the universe and taking away his mercy and bestowal each and every second makes a God incapable of being worshipped. So they don't have a system of worship at all. Why will they worship God who has retired and gone away, leaving the world to us? So here it is, the way we want, we will deal with it. If we want to loot it, we will loot it. If we want to at times feel that charity is the best way of loot, we will do that as well. A lot of countries have been looted through charity. There are works on that, books written on that, articles written on that. You can see how charity has become the basic entry point through which the loot started. More so documented in Africa. More so documented in Africa. How it happened and how the different charities went in and took this advantage through charity of finding, seeking mineral wealth and then exporting it from the continent to their own countries at very, very low prices. Or even owning it by exploiting the tribal system of the poor villagers of Africa. So that's what it was. Now, in this lecture, moving forward, I have developed a lot of things which I had not developed in the last lecture, in our lecture of today. Now, if we move forward and see that when we start thinking of God as involved with the creation, how do we look at Him? Knowledge is the only growth process for human beings. The more knowledgeable we are, the chances of our acting in accordance with it would be there. Had we no knowledge, we would not be able to act in the correct direction. So the knowledge becomes the basis for our growth, provided after the knowledge, we follow that knowledge and not use it for purposes which are not made for us to take advantage in a selfish manner of the knowledge which has come to us. So knowledge but is essential, irrespective of whether we use it for selfish ends or whether we do not use it for selfish ends. Knowledge is essential, both ways. But the question is, how does knowledge come and how is God involved with the giving of knowledge? Again, the verse, the famous verse, Ayatul Kursi, we have it, Surah Baqarah, verse number 255, part of it, وَلَا يُحِتُونَ بِشَيْءٍ مِّنْ إِلْمِهِ إِلَّا بِمَا شَاءَ. And they do not comprehend anything of His knowledge except what He wishes. They do not comprehend anything, that is human beings, of His knowledge, of God's knowledge, except what He wishes. So whatever knowledge is coming to us, it is the process of God and His wish. And He knows when and where to give that knowledge. I have spoken about intuition earlier. Had the issue of intuition been limited to the Mumineen, then there would be nothing for those who had the intention to learn more about the universe without being Mumineen. And considering that the souls of the Mumineen and those who have not accepted iman in this world, though initially at the time of creation in the form of aql and at the time of entry, which I mentioned last time, alastu bi rabbikum, before just entering into the body, they were capable of accepting God and were witness to it. But once they entered, they have refuted it or are not accepting it or in a state of oblivion. They don't say whether he exists or not. Or if they say he exists, they are not very much interested in worshipping him. So what happens here? If God stops intuition from being given the kind of knowledge to others than Mumineen, that means there is no option of an alternative force to the Mumineen. Simple as that. The fact that alternate forces will be there is part of the system of God. God doesn't stop intuition to work in others, but he does that basically to see to it that the Mumineen will understand that if God can give knowledge through intuition to those who are not accepting him also, or are accepting him and doing shirk as well, it obviously implies that he will be giving them more if they turn to him. So it helps us in two ways. Once, if we are not following the path of God and just asserting that we are mu'min, we are following the Quran, we are following the Prophet, we are following the Ahlul Bayt, but are not working on those lines, it is a clear indication to us, the world will not stop with you. If you forget to do what you have to do, the system of God will make the world go forward, knowledge increase through the non-mumineen route. And you would become slaves to their knowledge. And through their knowledge, they will enslave you. Has this not happened? When the Mumineen forgot the rules of the game set by God and started to play the game of life on the basis of their own rules based on carnal desires, worship of wealth, though on the face of it we were all speaking of God, even praying to him 5 times a day, but in the heart there was no iman. And what God has done as a result. And all this is mentioned in the Quran. All this is mentioned. If you accept part of the book and do not accept part of it, you will be disgraced in this world. And in the hereafter, you will have the worst azab. A dishonoring azab. This is what the Quranic verses say. I've just translated. Khizyun fil hayatid dunya. Disgrace in this world's life. What if you believe in part of the book and not believe in part of it? This was for the Jews as well. This was for the Christians as well. And this is now for us as well. Because at that time the book was just coming. But now, years after, we are in a position where we are very, very clear about what we have done to ourselves. We have not worked the way we should have worked. We have not worked for God the way we should have worked. And therefore, intuition being a common heritage of human beings, because the aql was created at the beginning and it encompassed and included everybody's aql. Then the process of spirit came, again the same thing, and the nafs, again the same. So the intuition part will be alive, though the additional intuition which God has given to Mumineen, as a result of which Islam ruled the civilizational race or was ahead in the civilizational race for 1,000 years, was basically because of the great mercy of God through the knowledge which it had given to them as a result of the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt. The efforts made by the Ahlul Bayt though they were not in political power, was basically this, to encourage people to absorb knowledge and grow. Though politically the system had changed, the knowledge which developed in the Islamic world during the first three centuries and which led later on for towards further progress was basically the effort of these pure ones. So purity has an additional capacity of enhancing human intuitiveness and therefore its capability to get to more knowledge, more seminal areas of knowledge. Cross the frontiers of today's knowledge. We have it in us. Our children should need to be made to understand that it is in them, if they apply themselves completely and fully, that they will grow to that point where they will be able to absorb more than others, because faith by itself, piety by itself is a source of knowledge, as the Quran says in so many verses. So we have that kind of an additional strength, a propulsive force, where propulsion takes place through the taqwa of the human being, through the piety and God consciousness of the human being, who is a mu'min. So if we move forward on these lines, we actually get so many other verses which help us to understand how God guides us. About the Prophet, the Quran says, Surah Zuha, verse 7, the Surah chapter number 93, وَوَجَدَكَ ظَالًا فَهَدَى. Did he not find you astray and guide you? This is about the Prophet. The Prophet required knowledge as well. And God says, did he not find you astray and guide you? Every moment of our lives, we are in a flux. We need knowledge. And if a new situation develops, there is a chance of us going astray, this way or that. And it's God who says, I am the one who guides at each moment if you want that guidance to come to you. And he did this to the Prophet. And he mentions this obviously. And it's just not for the sake of the Prophet, it's for us. We are in darkness without God. Every second, whatever light we want for the soul is the light of God. Allahu Nuru Samawati wal Ard. God is the light of the heavens and the earth. Obviously, he is the light of the souls as well. When he can enlighten the heavens and the earth, obviously his enlightenment of the soul, which is much closer to him, is his first creation, is a billion times more powerful. So we need to take off that light. And that light is available. He's close to you. Inni qareeb, he says. I'm close to you, very close to you. Ujibu da'wata da'i zadan. And I answer back when I'm called. If the soul calls to God, God replies. If a tainted soul calls to God, God doesn't reply. Because a tainted soul will ask more of good, more of bad than of good. Because the taintedness, the impurity will arouse in us desires which we will ask of God. يَدْءُ الْعِنْسَانَ بِالشَّرِّ دُعَاءُهُ بِالْخَيْرِ وَكَانَ الْإِنْسَانُ عَجُولًا, says the Quran. Man, in his hurry and desire to get to things quickly, seeks from us shar, something which will harm him instead of something which will benefit him. So at times when our dua is there in the state of less piety or no piety at all, in the state of sin, all that prayer and worship, had God answered them, would have ruined us. He warns us. You ask things at times which are going to do you more harm than doing more good to you. Specifically when we ask for matter and material. What we have, we are unable to manage it the way God wants us to manage, and we are asking for more. That is an inclination towards materialism. Have we exhausted the level of what we have and have used it in the way God wants it to be used? Then our asking for more would be like Prophet Solomon asking for a mulk, bigger and better than what God would give to anybody after. This is only when you are able to do justice to what you already have. And then you ask for more to do more justice. Good to yourself, your family, your friends, your society. We have not been able to manage that. We ask for more. This is the question of going astray. And God says, at these moments, it is He who guides us. And where the Quran says, they keep returning to Him. Inaba, that's the word which the Quran uses. They keep returning to Him. So we need to continually return to Him. This is one of the qualities of Prophet Abraham mentioned in the Quran. Keep continuously returning to God. As a child which seeks solace in the mother's lap, a very young child, a year or two old, a baby. Similarly, our love for God should be something which should come from the depth of the soul. Because the soul is closest to Him, not to this material world, not to the family, not to the children, not to the things we own. No, no. The soul is closest there. So it finds Allah bi dhikrillahi tatmainnul qulub, says the Quran. Know for sure that through the remembrance of God do souls feel satisfied and reassured. This is what is expected of us. Living with Him in this world. Living in Him in this world. Living in Him in this world. It is possible. It is possible. The only thing we require is a bit more attention towards Him, who is above the physical. And we have a soul which is above the physical, but interacts with the physical to fulfill the purpose of His sending us to the world. Now, when we speak of knowledge, how does knowledge become a central pillar in our saving our souls or leading to the destructions of the soul? Here again we have the verse. 8th surah, Surah Anfal, chapter 8, verse 42. لَيْهَلِكَ مَنْ هَلَكَ عَنْ بَيِّنَةٍ وَيَهِيَّ مَنْ هَيَّ عَنْ بَيِّنَةٍ وَإِنَّ اللَّهَ لَسَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ. So that he who perishes might perish by a manifest proof, and he who lives may live on by a manifest proof. And surely God is all listening and all knowing. So that is very clear. If we are going to save our souls, it will be through a clear and manifest proof. And if we lose our souls, it again will be on the basis of a clear and manifest proof. This is the centrality of knowledge in religion. You can't be away from a knowledge-based religion even for a second. And if you are, the chances of Satan taking you away from the path becomes very, very, very obvious. A bit more persistence and he has had you. If you come back quickly by doing tawbah and inabah, it works. You are saved. But if you let loose yourself, it will not be long before you would be tempted by Satan in a way which would be making it more difficult for you to come back to the original state where you were before this temptation came to you. This is what the verse says. It will be a manifest proof through which you will be saved. So why not seek those proofs which will save us? And be wary of those which will grab us and lead us to perdition and destruction. Can we do it? Yes, we surely can. Those whom we revere, we talk about them day in and day out, the imams, the masumeen, try to bring this idea close to our souls. How to go on the path of worship towards God and how to take from Him and use it for the benefit of everyone including yourself. We are not a monastic order and we do not believe in monasticism. Islam doesn't. It considers it to be an innovation. The Quran is very clear about it. وَالرَّهْبَانِيَةَ نِبْتَدَوْهَا says the Quran. And monasticism, this is what they created as an innovation. So we don't believe in the monastic order. So when I am saying something, I am not asking anyone amongst us or myself to become a monk. I am not. I am saying, be what we are. Have families. Like the things of the world. The Prophet said, I like certain things about the world. And he was very clear about it. Nobody stops you from good food. But God surely stops us from gluttony. Verses in the Quran. وَالَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا يَاكُلُونَ كَمَا تَاكُلُ الْأَنْعَامِ And those who are ungrateful eat as the cattle eat. And the hellfire is their end. Eating and eating and eating in this world will only lead us to hell. That's what the Quran says. But it never stops us from enjoying good food at all. We can partake of good food. No stopping that. Even jewelry. Jewelry is also accepted. مَنْ حَرَّمَ زِينَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي أَخْرَجَ لَعِبَادِهِ Those things which God has brought out from the earth. Things which beautify you. Who has prohibited them? And what tayyibatim in others? And pure food, good food. No problem at all. So when we don't have a problem with good food, with the basic. But again, here again, God censures those who hoard gold and silver and jewels. Temperance. And if there is a chance, falling on the side of caution, where we are not sure whether we are in the middle path or not, it's better to fall towards the side of piety of a higher kind than to fall towards the side where it's easier for Satan to get us and move us on the path which is not accepted by God. So we are not speaking of monasticism at all. We are speaking of an inward life. Why are we doing that? Why does the Quran does that? It is basically through the physical expression of the soul that the society will become a society of God. It is the physical expression of the soul. How the soul will act in the physical world and use the purity of it to understand the laws of the world, of the universe, the material laws, and then material laws, when I am saying, even includes the laws of economics as well, just not laws of physics. The laws of economics as well, and then make the world a place which is a just place. As the Quran says, يَقُومَ النَّاسُ بِالْقِسْطِ. So that people may, mankind may uphold justice. So if you are not going really, and the soul is not expressing itself through the material world, the world of God's will and wish will never be possible in this world. It's through this expression. And therefore God encourages us to go towards the physical, but with the intention of qurbatan ilallah. And this is possible. If you don't have greed and you don't want to lose your soul in the world's pleasures, only there will the Quran come and stop you. Where the material will become stronger than your purpose on earth. Your freedom is being taken away from you by your lust and your greed. This is where God stops you. If you are above greed, if you are above lust, God doesn't want to stop you. That is what hudud of God are, the limitations of God are. Within them you can work as much as you want. And where you are getting greedy, you will be knowing. If you are conscious of your soul, and where you are feeling lust, you will be knowing. And they are laws which define how you should keep away from greed as well as lust. Keep your gaze low, says the Quran, for both men and women. Don't gaze, don't ogle. This is purer for you, Quranic verses. Greed again, not to seek of this world, you have in the duas also, more than what suffices you. And if you have something more than that, use it so that you can move towards God through that extra which you have. So converting the material into eternal sawab is the purpose of the mu'min. He has more, he plans it in a manner that he will convert it before he dies into eternal sawab and move out. The money would be well spent, created sawab, through his own example, given a path to his children to follow. Make them understand that greed is not the best of things in this world. Because what you leave without spending it in the way of God, the sawab for it would be, or the azab of it would be, for those who are in charge of it. They can't be trusted for what you have not done. So when you have your own control, do it before you lose that control and then expect your children to do for you. It's not possible. They have their own priorities and you have not shown them the way. Had you shown them the way, then they would have acted maybe in a particular manner. So without showing them the way and expect them to do what you have not done is, I think, a bit of worldliness more than taqwa. So work on those principles as well. Third, I'll just go fast. God says in the Quran that we are indigent, we are the faqir, we are the beggars, and he is the self-sufficient, ghani. This idea that when God is asking of us, he is not asking because he wants something for himself, it's for us that he is asking. It is like a doctor advising a patient what to eat, what to not to eat, what medicine to take, what not to take. It's not the doctor's problem, it's our problem. He is trying to find a solution for us. We are totally dependent on God, and he is not dependent on anyone. That's the basis. What happens when we take another route? This is what the Quranic verse says. Surah Alaq, Surah 96, verses 6 to 8. கல்ல இன்னல் இன்சான லயத்கா அர்ராஹுஸ்தக்னா இன்னா இலா ரப்பிகா ருஜ்ஆ. The verse is like this. Indeed, man becomes rebellious when he considers himself self-sufficient. Indeed, man becomes rebellious when he considers himself self-sufficient. Indeed, to your Lord is the return. This was what I was mentioning few minutes ago. Never consider ourselves to be self-sufficient. We are always fuqara. Always asking God for something. If not material wealth, the guidance how to use material wealth. This is all dependent on Him. So the constant need of the soul to call Him continually, think of Him continually, wherever you get time, and feel Him through the soul, makes this world the best place for the soul to be living in, to be tested. And why should not the soul want to be tested? Its glory is in its being tested. Its glory is in its being tested. Had it not been in this form, it wouldn't have grown. It would have been in a constant state. So this world actually is an opportunity. And the hadiths which are there, that this world for the moment is the best place for, it's like a field where, or a farm where he's growing his produce of taqwa. Where will it be able to grow that? The sawab for the akhirah is all earned here. Whatever you sow here, you will reap there. And this is the best place to sow the seeds of taqwa. Ad-dunya madra'atul akhirah, says the hadith. It's the field, it's the farm of the akhirah. Sow taqwa here and reap the benefits there. Apart from that, because the benefits are being reaped there in a state where the soul is free of examination, the soul, if it can detach itself from its worldly endeavors, it will feel the sawab straight away here in this world also. It will feel itself being lifted, elevated, in a state of levitating itself. It will feel like that. And that is the happiest moment you can reach. That is the miraj for the moment, which can at times occur during prayer, where the hadith says, As-salatu mirajul mumin. Prayer, the daily prayers, salat, is the miraj of the mumin. It's the instrument for the mumin to reach the highest point of ascendancy. Hopefully we would be able to achieve all this through our efforts in God, with God's help, and in the creation of God, through our efforts individually, and more so jointly as a group, as a society, as a community. Wa akhiru da'wana anil hamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Again, thank you very much, Mujahid. We're very wide-ranging, and actually I think this today's talk was very much on a lot of practical issues as well. And there's lots of take-home messages in there, which I think the group, I'm sure, would have found it very useful. If I can kick off one question which I picked up was, you talked about ilmul nafs and the impact on the nafs of worship, of sin, of good deeds. How do we detect on the soul that impact? How do we know what impact certain actions are having?
To people who are much younger than us, Azarbai, I would say, right, I think by the age we have reached, the idea of sin may have gone out of our minds, maybe. That's what I was thinking. But for the younger ones,
जी
द फीलिंग ऑफ द नफ इंप्रूविंग इट्स क्वालिटी वुड बी थ्रू देयर फाइंडिंग दैट व्हाट सिन दे वुड डू विद ईज इज नाउ बिकमिंग मोर डिफिकल्ट फॉर देम टू डू. Things which attracted them more are becoming less and less now. That attraction is waning. It's coming down. So, the purification of nafs is very clear where you know that your desire for what you were desiring earlier may be a sin or not a sin also. More so where it's a sin, considering that the person has just started off on the path of God, is that he will find it more difficult to sin. That is the starting point. And that is the rahmat of God. There are hadiths here which say, when God starts loving a woman, he makes sin more difficult for him. And the love will come once you start following the Sharia. You love God, you follow the Prophet, and God starts loving you at that higher level. Otherwise, he loves you from the very beginning. Otherwise, he would not have created you and me. The fact that he loves you, ab initio, is there. But the question of enhancing that love, God says, "In kuntum tuhibbuna Allah fattabi'uni yuhibbukum Allah." If you love God, O Prophet, say that follow you. That is the Prophet. Yuhibbukum Allah. And God will start loving you. Yes. This love of God comes through making sin more difficult for that moment who started loving God out of his choice. And then, according to the verse, started following the Prophet. Allah starts loving him. And then what does Allah do? وَيَغْفِرْ لَكُمْ ذُنُوبَكُمْ. And then he takes away, removes the sins. What happens is when the sins are removed from you, the pull gets reduced. When the pull gets reduced, your intention of doing good becomes and a reality much quicker than earlier it used to. For example, you wanted to do some charity. You were just thinking about it. And through the process of love of God and following the Prophet, and after God started loving you and then removed the sins in this world, you feel it much easier to do that. So there are small things from which we can feel how God is interacting with us, positively as well as where we are making mistakes negatively as well by warning us. There are verses in the Quran which again say that we see to it that if you are going wrong, we cause it to become a problem for you so that you may come back. So at times sins lead to a problem which we were not anticipating. God says that problem is my creation so that you can retrace your steps back to me. So he starts doing everything he can for human beings. You can just understand when the Arabs were not accepting the Quran and the Prophet. The Quranic verse is there, O Prophet, you are killing yourselves because they are not having faith in what you are saying. So if the Prophet of God, whom God has made a mercy for the nations, feels so bad, why are these Arabs not accepting the truth which I have brought from God? And to that extent that God says you are killing yourself. Just imagine that God, how he feels when he is given everything and people say, maybe he is not there. Afillahi shakkun fatiris samawati wal ard, says the Quran. Doubting God, the originator of the heavens and the earth, it doesn't say anything more. How? Why? From where? And by doing this, where will you go? Nowhere. You'll start forgetting yourself according to the words of the Quran. Don't be like those who have forgotten God's and God made them forget themselves. So, this is what God is. And I think he continually keeps acting with us. With each and every individual, because he has said in the Quran, Inni Qareeb. Ujibu Dawatadai. It's in a single, not I am close to all of you. That also he has said. But he has said, I am close to each one of you. So that each one of us is close to him. And I can tell you, the most obvious reality for a detached soul is God. The most obvious reality for a detached soul is God. There is no greater reality the soul can think of. Now that the soul is living in the body and wanting to get everything through the physical experience, the problem comes. Stop thinking that everything is going to come to you through the physical experience. You have released yourself. And then see how and in what manner the world changes. It changes. It just changes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Very, very good advice. Excellent answer. I can see Musa Bhai's hand is up. Would you like to ask your question, Musa Bhai? You need to unmute.
Yes. No, I have sent that question in the chat. So if you can read that question, that will be fine.
Okay. So the question says, what is the difference?
Let me explain it.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Now, what is the difference between intuition, kashf, and tajalli?
Intuition?
And, intuition, kashf. And
kashf.
Tajalli.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I get it. I was thinking of some English word after that. Yeah. Kashf, I can say that should be intuition if I use the word in Arabic. I am trying to just define the fact that we were participants as not creators, but as observers, as spectators of the whole universe. We were participating not as creators, but as observers of the physical creation of the world. And then the body was given to the soul. The spirit was blown into the body and the nafs came into being. What occurs to the nafs when it is capable of detaching itself from the physical contours, from the physical existence, to whatever extent possible? It is at that point that it is capable of absorbing more from the real condition of it, the original condition of it. And that could be called intuition or, as you just asked, kashf. So there is no great difference. I am just speaking of the process. Why does kashf happen? Why does intuition happen? And why does it even happen to those who are not believing in God or even doing shirk, which is zulmun azim? The reason is simple and plain. If detachment comes, and maybe at times detachment comes as a result of practice for selfish gains of this world as well, and God has opened that door also. So there are so many doors open for those who are not believing God or believing in Him through what we call esoteric practices, through which all these can be achieved at times. There are practices which include magic as well, in a particular format, which Quran hints at. And also hints at the fact that this is going to make you a kafir. Because what magic was being planned or being taught was basically the result for getting ascendancy in this world over others and using it to exploit others, creating dissension among people. And therefore they warned the person to whom it was being given, beware that this will lead you to kufr. So goes the verse. So the kashf can be of a genuine kind or, and at times, of a different kind as well. What I am speaking of intuition in general holds for kashf as well.
And what is tajalli? Tajalli.
Tajalli would be the soul recognizing something in an instant. That would be a kind of a spark. Right? You can express it in the form of a spark. And we are getting electricity and this thing is what we call, the room is lit. And then you see a spark. The spark by itself is the height of a particular experience of the soul. So the constant part, we can say, is like intuition or kash, and the sudden spark of a high velocity could be called a tajalli. Again, of the same state of the soul, where what we would be saying, tajalli is a spark. And intuition is a longer drawn electrical process, for example, the way light comes. Continually photons moving and giving it. Tajalli would be a spark.
Now another question is, does intellect itself enough to attain the truth, or does it require kash?
See, knowledge, as I told you in the verse, Ayatul Kursi, part of it, La yuhituna bishayim min ilmihi illa bima shaa. The question of any knowledge will come only through God, even when there are processes, esoteric practices which God has opened up, magic which God has opened up in a limited way, so that this world in which we are living should not be a domain where there is exclusiveness for the mu'mineen, and those who are trying to oppose the system of God are left high and dry without anything. Left high and dry without anything. So this path is open again to everyone, basically because to keep a level playing field. What comes to them through that is destruction. What comes to us through the right process is recreation and regeneration and rejuvenation. They will destroy what is already there. We will regenerate, rejuvenate what is going down. And obviously raise things to a higher level which are already there. So there is a very, very obvious kind of a thing here. God's will is there in any form of knowledge moving towards human beings. Any form of knowledge according to the verse of, according to the Ayatul Kursi. La yuhituna bishayin min, even a small thing, bishayin, even a small thing of his knowledge will not be given except in the manner he desires and wishes. And it can go to others, it can come to us. The question is basically that the processes, the definition for that is already given. All knowledge occurs to the soul. There is no doubt about it. The mind is a memory. The mind is a memory. It gets all the inputs from the external world and keeps it. All those inputs are used by souls with a different purpose. A mu'min would use all that input to spread justice, and a kafir will use all those inputs to spread or do injustice. The mind has the data for both. He exploits it and he puts it on the right path. This again is God's help. He gets help from God to raise it to a different level through knowledge again. And this person gets it on the wrong side. He is misguided by God because of his intentions being bad, and therefore he goes the other way. So knowledge always comes to the soul. The processes of knowledge, the rules are properly defined. It can come to the mu'min or the kafir, but if it comes to the kafir, he'll be using it for the worldly purposes. If it comes to the mu'min, he will never use it for a selfish purpose. He will always use it for a higher purpose, even if it's sustaining himself, because through him, he feels, through his family, he feels that good would be sustained in the world. So sustaining your family, sustaining your relatives, sustaining things which are close to you from the worldly point of view doesn't make any difference, provided the intention is going towards God and strengthening the work of God in the world.
So reality is, the more you detach yourself from material things, you are more making yourself more fertile to attain the intuition of kash.
Obviously. Obviously. But again, the question is how you are able to. What happens actually, you see, is when you try to detach yourself from material things and become an ascetic. There were people who used to try this during the period of Imam Hazrat Ali also, alayhi salam. They tried to follow him. Eat the way he is eating, dress the way. he would call them and say, don't do it. Because what you are doing is the zahir of it. I do it as a result of my internal condition. So it's very, very important when detaching yourself from material things that your internal condition should make you do it. Otherwise, it would be something like weightlifting. Weightlifting is a physical activity. It will strengthen your muscles. Very obvious. But this kind of work, doing it with the for the soul, it is to be done through the soul. This is like a weightlifting of the soul. So if you do it as a very, very mundane activity, while your mind is not in consonance with it, your ruh is not in consonance with it, it will become a problem. And whatever zuhad we are doing, we will try to show it to others than doing it for God. And that is the problem of asceticism, which will come to us if we are not properly, what we call, developed our souls to a point where it becomes a natural process as it was for Maulai Muttaqiyan. We need to detach our souls from this and then the worldly function of it can follow, not the other way around.
MashaAllah, it was very fruitful to clarify some of the issues. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Musa bhai.
Thank you, Agha. It was really very nice lecture. We all enjoyed here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think the questions are over, I suppose.
Zafar bhai, can you mute yourself, please? Thank you. Ali, go ahead. Ali, go ahead. Mute. You're muted.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me?
Now we can. Yeah. Go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum, Mujahid bhai. I have a question for you. Alaikum assalam. I have a question for you overlapping last week's, a couple of weeks' lecture and what you have covered today. So what I would like to put to you is, if we say soul, spirit, ruh, intellect, are all faculties equivalent to power granted to us, e.g. man, by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so the material and the organs are cells, have the consciousness to acquire knowledge and have wisdom, so that we have closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So what I'm trying to put to you is the ayat which I've come across in Surah Hijr, ayat 29, and says, and I breathe into him of my spirit. Is the spirit here the power which God has granted us to come closer to him while using this body? Thank you. Your reflection, please.
Yeah. We have discussed this in detail, I suppose, that through the hadith which we were speaking about the aql being the first of creation and the best of creation in the form that it would be rewarded and would also face retribution. All these we have spoken from the hadith. Considering that the ruh of Allah, rafaqtu fihi min ruhi, right, the spirit of God, has to be something metaphysical in itself. It cannot be physical. And once metaphysical, it has to go back to being before the physical world was created. So therefore, we term it that the first of creation was aql, and this capacity of the spirit, which converts itself into the soul or nafs, once it's breathed into the body, are, as I have mentioned earlier also, in the form of a wave. It starts like this. The aql, the ruh and the nafs, intellect, spirit, soul. This is the formats of the question of this being said. Now the question is why this has been given. The whole thing is that if you have to create something which is best, it has to be able to have freedom. Freedom is only possible when it is exposed to forces which are going to act in counter to what it is originally created in the form it is originally created. And that form of worship, which is the pure form, and for which it has been sent by God to the world. We have used the verse again. مَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لَيَعْبُدُونَ. This is basically putting the same fact that we created the aql, we made it the spirit, and then the nafs, the soul. The intention of ours is not anything but to keep that state of original glory, that state of accepting completely God commands. So this is why we have sent you here. So God is very clear about it. He has not changed the purpose of creation of aql, of ruh, of nafs, of intellect, of spirit, of soul. He's not. There's no reason for it. But he makes it very clear to us that I'm telling you, you will be tested here. You will be tested here. And the testing would give you a growth of a different kind altogether. Your love for me in the original design would be tested by love for things which are very charming to you, very what we would call resplendent to you. From the very first time when Adam was told not to go near the tree, he couldn't resist it. The reason was he wanted to stay in the state of the garden and bliss forever, and he knew that this was not possible the way he was created. Saturn came and said, in this state I will give you immortality, the physical immortality of this world. And that is what was the greatest temptation for Adam. And at that time, where we didn't have other things at all, there was no industry, there was no other activities of what we are now exposed to, that was the greatest temptation for Adam. And he got it. Every one of us goes through this life by getting the greatest temptations of this life. All of us at our own levels, at our own levels. If we can go over them, or if we stumble and fall, pick ourselves up, do tawbah and go back to God. He really loves the people who do tawbah. يُحِبُّ التَّوَّابِينَ وَيُحِبُّ الْمُتَطَحِّرِينَ is the verse of the Quran. He loves those who are penitent, who do tawbah, and those who want to purify themselves. Those who keep themselves pure. What a lovely ayat, and what a great God. He loves those. He never says, why did you stumble and fall? In the other words, O nafs which has done zulm, we will forgive you all your sins, says the Quran. Now this is big. This is big. All your sins, including shirk. Shirk, if you don't do tawbah, will not be forgiven in the qiyamah. But shirk, when you do tawbah, here is forgiven. Then what is the reason for sending prophets to the mushrikeen? Obviously, they do tawbah and come back and become mu'mineen. So what we have here is, if I understand your question correctly, is that the original design was maintained when God sent us in this world, and he proclaimed that I want only and only, the act of the ruh is only worship. Illa liyabudun, only worship. So we should not consider, I have discussed this in detail, any activity of maintaining our families, the love of a mother towards a child, what we call mamta in our Urdu. All these are the animal functions. The function of the ruh is beyond this. The function of the nafs is beyond this. The function of the aql is beyond this. It's worship of God. And that worship in this present world will take physical forms in the form of ibadat. We have a physical format of ibadat, of salat, physical form of saum, roza, fasting, physical form of zakat and khumus, physical form of hajj. All these things are physical ritual where you are making the body capable to accept the commands of the soul. That's all. You are making the body capable through all these processes to accept more and more the commands of the soul. And through that, God raises us to levels higher and higher and higher. And as I mentioned in the last lecture, we don't know what waits us if we go through this process purely. Of the reward which he gives us. He just mentions one single sentence, Wa Rizwanullahi Akbar. And the satisfaction or the Rizwan, the acceptability, God's being happy with you, content with you is the greatest thing possible. That's what the Quran says. We don't know what it will be coming to. How it would be rewarded, we hardly know anything. What examples the Quran has shown are the basic sawabs of Jannah, where God speaks of Sharaban Tahura, pure drink, speaks of Hurs, speaks of different kinds of fruits. These are for you to get started on the journey. Then goes on to say Rizwanullahi Akbar. What I really intend for you is not something which I can even write down here in this book. And that is what the soul should feel. That is what the soul should feel about God. You just look at the intricacy of the whole creation. Look at the intricacy of the whole creation. We are knowing more and more of it, right? From both the point of view of physics, chemistry and biology. And then the kind of astronomical size and the quantum realities. Mind-boggling. Coming from the same Rahman and Rahim. With total power. Fa'alul lima yurid. Does what he desires. And it desires is to make purity an independent reality outside him. And that is through us. Can we come back with that purity to him? Illa man atallaha bi qalbin salim, says the Quran, I will not accept anyone except he who comes to me with a pure heart. May God grant us all that pure heart when we leave this world. And may we be able to be accepted by God in that state. Inshallah.
Thank you very much. Very much, Mujahid. An excellent answer, I think. And unless there are any more questions, I can't see any raised hands. We've got Ramadan. Obviously, we are in Shaban now. And in like 2-3 weeks, we've got Ramadan. Would you be able to continue this in Ramadan, Mujahid, or what do you think?
I think we'll do one more because that will be falling before Ramadan.
Right.
Right. And during Ramadan, we'll see because I do generally give a weekly dars in Ramadan. Should we convert it into this or not, we will have to see. So let us have some time. We will do the next one if you all want the next 2 weeks later. And then we can take a call.
I think it would be good to continue in Ramadan. I mean, obviously it's a month of worship and prayer and so on. So it would be a shame to stop.
Would it be convenient for you all?
I mean, I've done check with a few people, but before the next session, I'll do like a individually. Yeah. I'll check with all of them. Yeah. I can see Musa has raised his hand. Musa, do you have a question? We've only got a few minutes.
Yes, Mujahid bhai. My question was, you know, you talked about spirituality and then getting ourselves to a higher level. What is the role of Qaza and Qadar in this? Like, what, would you kind of clarify these concepts?
Yeah. Qaza, yeah, I'll do that. Qaza and Qadar are the laws of God which are written obviously for everything that happens. For everything that happens. There is nothing which happens ad hoc with God. Because his knowledge is complete. And anybody with complete knowledge cannot act with less knowledge. So when you go and start processing the knowledge of God to the extent that we understand. Very, very beginning and rudimentary level. As beginners, we will find him knowing everything. And the laws of everything. And if it's not the case, things will not be under his control. Because he controls through laws, not on the basis of ad hocism. And for us also, it would be an ad hoc world. Certain things give us certain results and certain things just don't give us the same results. This should not happen. But the question is, for example, if I am praying and God praises Salat, and in the same Quran, God says, Wailul lil musalli, woe to the prayerful. Now this is also prayer, that is also prayer. People are being praised for being diamond, continually, perpetually in the state of worship. And here we are having the prayerful being cursed. Why does it happen? There is a Qaza and Qadr here also. There Quran says, where you are making Salat a path towards me at the highest level, where you are interacting me at the closest point, where you have drawn yourself out from the physical activity of the world and now have made your soul in a, brought it into a state where it starts interacting with me at the highest level possible for you. Those who really go into prayer are in a state where they forget their body. Their body is in auto mode. It goes down in ruku, it goes down in prostrate. But what they are doing is concentrating and the ruh moving in God in that state. There are rules for that as well. The question is, which of the rules of God will we make the rules which would be applied to us? There are rules which lead to degeneration, which there are rules which lead to regeneration. So if they lead to regeneration, the Qaza and Qadr of that applies. There is no compulsion of any kind in this world for a human being where he is forced to act in a particular way, where God will force him into sin. It's not possible. Our sinning will be totally on us. And similarly, our acts of goodness also will be on us. The processes, the rules and the regulations are not ours. So we can't say, the result of my prayer will have to be this. He knows. His Qadr will determine whether my prayer is pure or not. The sacrifice given by Abel and Cain, both thought it to be pure in themselves. But God saw that Abel's sacrifice was on the basis of piety and taqwa and Cain's was not. So again, all these rules and regulations which are partly known to us and in a great number, in a great sense, not known to us at all, would be placed in the domain of Qaza and Qadr. His control is complete. We might know a bit of it and be able to determine the results through what we feel of the soul becoming better. And again, in that state, we start thinking that we have become great and we have become more superior to others. The next laws start applying. The laws of pride. You have done a wonderful job doing good prayer, worship. Your soul was raised to a particular level and then you started feeling that you are superior to others. The other law starts. So the Qaza and Qadr is a continuous process which keeps hitting at you for your detriment or your betterment. And when I say detriment, it doesn't mean once a person falls, he keeps falling. No, God doesn't have that. He rescues his fallen servant in 101 ways. That is his mercy, which is a general mercy, which includes everybody. Rahmati wasayat kulla shay, says the Quran. My mercy encompasses everything, everything. Even to the extent that it encompasses Pharaoh, because God says to Musa and Harun, go to him, both of you, and talk to him gently. Why? This is the rahmat of God. He was arrogant. God sends two prophets of that stature and says, talk to him mercifully. That is the mercy of God. Softly, that is the mercy of God. So Qaza and Qadr is a very, very powerful concept. But again, the question is, we should feel it in the form the controls are with God, and we can only put ourselves in a point where He has guided us and expect the best of Qaza and Qadr to come and fall in our fate. That's what would be the idea. Thank you.